Welcome to Batflips and Nerds, episode 5. You'll notice that I'm not John McGee, I'm Darius Austin. John is unfortunately unable to be with us tonight. I believe he is actually at the opera, which is an interesting one. So instead, we've just got myself and a new guest, Ben Carter. Ben, if you'd like to say hello and tell everyone where they can find you on the internet.
Hey Darius, and hello everyone. I'm Ben Carter. I'm writing a few articles for Batflips and Nerds, and I also have my own blog, which you can find on Twitter, at UK Baseball Blog, all one word, which is my Twitter account where I try and post updates on what I'm writing and other things that fascinate me in the world of baseball. But yeah, I've written a few articles for Batflips and Nerds too, so hopefully you can find my stuff fairly easily.
Yeah, we've certainly got some great stuff on the site from you and an article we'll get into later on pitch framing, which I'm looking forward to talking about. First, I really wanted to start with the kind of things that we've all introduced ourselves with already on the other episodes. And that's kind of how did you get into baseball and what you you watch and what you like seeing on the field and any players and teams you love. So we'll start off with how you got into the sport. What was it that first brought you into MLB?
Okay, sure. My story and how I got onto MLB is similar to yours, actually, in that initially I was into the NFL, American football, and I played fantasy NFL with a group of friends. And at the end of one season, we were kind of hungry for more, and someone mentioned that the baseball season was starting soon. And knowing nothing about baseball, but wanting to win another fantasy league, I said, yeah, of course, let's do it. So before I knew it, I was signed up to a league I knew nothing about, which is the point at which I said I should probably learn something about this sport. So I started perusing the internet and finding out as much as I could about baseball and all the different players in it. I didn't really learn much that first season. I think my first round draft pick was Carl Crawford, who was awful for the Red Sox. But from there, my love for baseball has grown. And now, that was about 5 years ago now. I'd like to think now I know a fair bit more about baseball. And my love for the game has just grown.
Excellent. So in terms of what you actually enjoy watching on the field, are there any particular players or anything you look for? Is it a good pitching duel or a certain hitter that you like to see? Or what is it that you're really into?
Yeah, I love a good pitcher's duel, actually. I love watching good pitching, especially guys like Clayton Kershaw. One of my favourite pitchers before I retired was Cliff Lee, just for his pinpoint control and his kind of subtle swagger on the mound. In terms of other things I love to see is good defence. I'm actually a long-time suffering Rockies fan, and one of our small highlights from recent years has been Nolan Arenado at third base. Watching him flash the leather has been the only thing keeping me going for a while. Defense and pitching are two things I go for, but of course, can't beat home runs too. So a little bit of everything, I suppose, but yeah,
pitching. I guess you get to see a lot of home runs as a Rockies fan.
That's true, yeah, usually off our pitching, but still, home runs are home runs.
Yeah, absolutely. And on the flip side of that, I know we've all sort of highlighted the fun police as something that unites us in hatred, but is there something that about baseball that you really don't like watching that you wish you could change about the game, or is something that just makes you turn off when you see it on the screen?
The fun police, again, I'm not a fan of. I'm all for bat flips, obviously. I'm all for enjoying the game while you're out there. Guys like Jose Fernandez who smile, who punch their fists, who do things like that, that's the kind of thing I like to see. So I hate to see guys who kind of try and enforce baseball. I mean, the idea to me that anything a player does with his bat after he's hit a home run could possibly warrant throwing a ball at him at 90 miles an hour. It's really ridiculous. So if I start seeing teams throwing at each other, it makes me a bit sick to my stomach. Other than that, I'm open to pretty much anything. Some players get on my nerves. I've always hated AJ Pierzynski. I don't know why, just the guy grinds my gears for some reason. And there are a few other guys who I'm not a huge fan of, but I like to think I'm fairly respectful when it comes to baseball players. I'll take pretty much anyone.
And do you feel animosity? I'm a Giants fan, as we were discussing before. Do you feel any animosity towards the teams in the division, or is it kind of all...
I mean, not really. For as long as I follow baseball and follow the Rockies, they've been awful. So I haven't followed them that closely because it just would have been painful, really. So I have a lot of animosity for any fans in baseball in particular. I suppose one thing that's always made me laugh is the idea the Cardinals' best fans in baseball kind of thing on Twitter, because they always seem to be the ones that get the most riled up. But as long as someone is a fan of baseball and is willing to turn their blinkers off when it comes to their team, I don't really hate any fan base in particular. So you're safe for this podcast, at least.
Okay, I won't expect any harsh shots then. Great. So I wanted to get into this latest piece that you've done on the site, which is about pitch framing, which is an area that really interests me. And I know you mentioned Ben Lindbergh, host of the Effectively Wild podcast, has done some great work on it. So I really want to get into talking about that. But before we get into the in-depth conversation, can you give a little introduction for people who don't really know much about framing, about what it is and why it's important?
Yeah, sure thing. So pitch framing, basically at its core, is all about how the catcher catches a pitch. So the idea of framing, this idea that a catcher can receive the pitch in a certain way to make it look more like a strike or less like a ball. So the idea is that good pitch framers, good catchers who take the ball well, can turn pitches that are outside the strike zone into strikes in the umpire's mind. And whilst this sounds a bit ridiculous, because obviously the umpire is subjective and who on earth to say the catcher's any skill? Guys like Ben Lindbergh and other people who are far smarter than me have done a lot of research into how catchers catch the ball, and it's actually turned out that some catchers have a pretty proven skill at turning more balls into strikes and less strikes into balls. On the flip side, some catchers are quite bad at it, and so tend to turn more balls, more strikes into balls, and more less balls into strikes. So that's basically the crux of it. And in my piece, I tried to break down what catchers can do to turn balls into strikes, and what umpires are looking for, and what statisticians are looking for when they say this guy's a good pitch framer or this guy isn't. So that's basically the essence of it.
Yeah, this is certainly an area that fascinated me when I first learned about it, because initially I couldn't really believe that it was true. Some of the research that came out saying how important it was, and I think maybe some of those early ones slightly overstated it initially, but there's still a lot of information to come out about it, as you've said. But sort of the more you watch different catches and the closer you watch how they receive the ball, the more you can believe it, I think. How long did it take you to sort of buy into the idea that pitch framing was a really valuable thing?
Yeah, I mean, it took me a little while. I remember reading a piece on Fangraphs, I think it was, which talked about pitch framing. And at first, like you said, some of the numbers they came out with for how catchers can affect the game seemed a bit ludicrous to me, because it's so hard when you know that a home run equals one run, but how on earth can a catcher catching the ball a certain way equal one run? So I found it a bit hard to believe at first, but the more I looked into it and the more I watched what the catchers have to do to be a successful pitch framer, I realised that actually there is a decent bit of traction to this pitch framing idea. And yeah, like you said, we still are kind of in the exploratory stage of realising how much value good pitch framers actually do extract. I think it's pretty clear now that they do at least do something, they provide some value, which to me is, yeah, really interesting. So I hope in future years we'll be able to learn a bit more and quantify a bit better exactly how valuable these catches are. But yeah, in my article, I just wanted to point out that it is a thing, that catches can influence the game on every pitch, and that pitch framing is going to be more important for, especially, say, the metric-minded teams.
So for somebody who was maybe watching a game and trying to keep an eye on, you know, somebody who was a good or a bad pitch framer, what would you be telling them to look out for? Are there certain things that you could, even as an uninitiated baseball watcher, you could see, you know, a catcher doing that would be helping or hurting them?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, the best pitch framers are the ones who minimise how much they move the glove when they catch the ball. So the idea is you put the glove out, set a target. When the ball hits it, you don't move it. So you see a lot of catchers, especially like if you go and watch a local game, or if you watch maybe the minor league, you see a lot of catchers with these exaggerated movements where they catch the ball and kind of drag it towards the strike zone, because you want to make it look more like a strike. But obviously the umpires aren't idiots, and they can see that the catchers are doing this, and that tends to be a bit of a red flag, whereas the guys who can kind of subtly snap their wrist, just hold the ball still, and make it appear like it was hit the glove exactly where it was intended to, tend to be a lot more successful. Another article I read suggested that if catchers kind of nod their head down as they catch the ball, kind of watch the ball into the glove, that's a bit negative. I think just the idea that if the catcher snaps his head or moves kind of jerkily, puts the umpire off a bit, whereas guys who can stay perfectly still in their crouch, that gives the impression to the umpire that pitch is exactly where it was meant to be, and so it's more likely to get a favourable strike call.
And I know you talk about Posey a lot in the piece, and watching Posey a lot is great for me as a Giants fan, because I think it's clear for everyone to see that he's an excellent framer, and you put some great examples in the article. What do you think of the Rockies' current catchers? How good are they, and how do they rate on the metrics?
The Rockies are actually a pretty interesting case study in pitch framing, because their number one catcher is Nick Hundley, who actually rates out as one of the worst pitch framers in the game. He has been worth, according to StatCorn, he's been worth, well, he's cost the Rockies 12 runs with his awful pitch framing this season. But interestingly enough, the Rockies' backup catcher who's getting more playing time now, Tony Walters, the left-hander, he's been a really, really good pitch framer. Even in limited playing time, he's in the top 10 easily among catchers. He's been worth about 9 runs himself for the Rockies. So when he plays, I imagine Rockies pitchers are fairly happy. But when Hundley's behind the plate, it tends to be to the detriment of the pitching staff, which would be interesting to watch how the Rockies use that data, if they believe it, if they think it's all a load of nonsense. But yeah, that's quite interesting that they have one really good and one really bad pitch framer.
I feel like the Rays are a team we've seen sort of trade with this in mind. Is there anyone else who comes to mind? Do you think any trades you've seen or moves you've heard about that you thought were maybe made primarily on the basis of pitch framing?
Yeah, I mean, the Rays, like you said, the poster boy typically was Benji Molina, the catcher who used to play for the Rays. He was poster boy for pitch framing. And the Rays have tried to continue that with their recent acquisitions. Another guy, David Ross of the Cubs, is well known for his pitch framing ability. So I think the Cubs more acquired him because of the idea of personal catches with John Lester. But I'm sure it didn't hurt the fact that he's such a good pitch framer. I'm sure that's why he gets starts on days when Lester doesn't pitch. Jonathan Lucroy of the Brewers, a lot has been made about his talent as a catcher. And I'm sure when they traded, sorry, not the Brewers, the Rangers, I'm sure when he got traded to the Rangers, they asked for more because of the fact he's such a good pitch framer. I know a lot of Red Sox fans will be hoping I say the name Christian Vasquez, because a lot was said about how good a defensive catcher he was, and he's certainly been impressive in limited action this season. So I think a few teams now are starting to take notice of good pitch framers. But a lot of it, I mean, the stats do vary from year to year. For example, Miguel Montero of the Cubs was awful last year and has been one of the best this year. So I'm sure some teams look at it and say, well, when the stats vary that much, can we really believe it? Which is fair enough. You probably won't be seeing many multi-million dollar contracts handed out to backup catchers because of their pitch framing. But some teams are certainly taking heed of what the stats say when they take their catches.
Do you feel, to an extent, I certainly see this sometimes with maybe the defensive metrics, where I'm confident in a player like Andrelton Simmons, who is obviously clearly elite, both to the eye test and in terms of the metrics. But when you kind of get towards that middle ground, it seems a lot harder to tell, and there's a lot of disagreement. Sometimes you'll get a player who's positive in one defensive metric and negative in another. You kind of feel the same way about pitch framing with that year-to-year variation, that maybe we, at the edges, you know, the very good or very bad, it's, you're kind of confident in the numbers, but in between, there's not so much certainty.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, a lot of the defensive metrics are flawed. I know for some of the players in the field, defensive metrics can swing a lot. If you make like one or two bad plays, I know that can change your entire season worth of stats, and I'm sure that's the case for pitch framing too, where, you know, if you have a couple of bad calls go your way, you're probably going to see yourself start dropping down. But it is funny that the big names do seem to come to the top every year, guys like Buster Posey, guys like Francisco Cervelli, Yadier Molina. So I think, yeah, well, at the top and the bottom end of this rep spectrum, you can pretty clearly say this guy's good, this guy's bad. But in that middle ground, I think we will see fluctuations, and that will make it hard to really evaluate guys accurately.
How difficult do you think this is to improve on? You say that the same guys do come out at the top every year. Do you see a lot of guys who make big jumps and sustain those from year to year, or has there not really been much evidence of that so far?
I know that a lot of catchers have been told, you're a good pitch framer, you're a bad pitch framer, and then have used that and said, well, I'm a bad pitch framer, I want to get better. I know, again, on sites like Fangraphs and Baseball Prospectus, they've had interviews with catchers who have said, I saw that going to the metrics, I'm a bad pitch framer, I want to improve that. So there are things that catchers can do to get better. But there are also catchers who can get significantly worse. This year, Salvador Perez has been a terrible pitch framer, and he's long been considered one of the best defensive catchers in the game. So I think for catchers, it can probably be a bit frustrating when you feel like you're playing well and suddenly you get told you've cost your team 5 runs because you haven't caught the ball quite right. But I think the best catchers will look at this and say, how can I improve myself? How can I be a better catcher? Which will only work out better for them, I imagine.
And something that you sort of touched upon in the article that I wanted to delve a little bit further into, you referenced the sort of expanding strike zone and whether this is really a good thing that catchers can trick umpires basically into giving them extra strikes. Do you think it's likely that, Rob Manfred and MLB will make any kind of change to sort of try and address this? Do you think, you know, we've seen a lot of rule changes lately around a lot of aspects of the game. Do you think there's any chance that they would try and take this away from players a little bit?
I mean, I find it hard to believe that MLB would change the game drastically and take power away from umpires in calling balls and strikes. It's because the tradition of the game is so strong, the most antiquated traditions even. And so I think MLB won't do anything drastic to do with it, but I'm sure Rob Manfred will want to talk to umpires and say, listen, the strike zone's been getting an inch lower every year for the last 5 years, and it's getting a bit ridiculous. Run scoring is down, although actually this year run scoring has gone back up again. But I think there comes a point at which you have to say, we don't really want catchers influencing the game by deceiving umpires. We want to have more accurate strike zone, and we want to have games decided on who's the best pitcher and who's the best hitter, not on who can catch the ball and drag it back to the strike zone best. But in terms of drastic rule changes, I can't see anything happening, at least in the near future.
Yeah, I know a lot of Sabre guys have been calling for robot umpires for a while now, but that does seem like a rule change that isn't going to happen unless we have a drastic change in the people who are running baseball. One more area I kind of wanted to talk about, and it's something that has come up on Effectively Wild lately as well, is the area of game calling. And I think they are in progress with sort of making stats to quantify that as well. Do you think that that's going to come out as a similar sort of value, or is it not quite as beneficial as framing is to teams in sort of a run-by-run basis?
Yeah, I mean, game calling is going to be even harder than pitch framing to quantify, just because we don't really know how much game calling is down to the catcher himself. We don't know how much the team calls, or guys on the bench. We don't know how much a veteran presence can be worth on the mound. I know that pitchers have said how much they enjoy pitching to older catchers, guys like Molina, guys like Posey now, I suppose, and these catchers who have this kind of aura of being great game callers. And I'm sure they do have a genuine value, but I find it hard to believe that it can be quite as valuable as the way, you know, pitch framing and their arm strength and things like that. But no, certainly if it does have an influence on the pitcher, then it has an influence on the result. So it would be fascinating to see if they can come up with a way to quantify how important game calling is and how important having a guy behind the plate who has experience and has good technique in terms of game calling would be in a game.
Yeah, Jonathan Judge, for those that are interested, was on Effectively Wild a couple of weeks ago, and he was talking a bit about the research they're doing into that and how much it matters. So check that out if you're interested in that area of the game.
Yeah, we'll do.
So I wanted to sort of have a little chat as well about the standings. As a Giants fan, I'm obviously biting my nails a bit at the moment because what looked like a fairly comfortable playoff spot is now turned into a pretty tense wildcard race, and everything is looking pretty close over in the AL as well. We'll start with the teams that certainly will concern some other members of the podcast team over in the AL East. How do you see that shaking out? Obviously, the Jays, the Red Sox and the Orioles have all got a pretty good shot of winning the division and taking the wild card as well. Do you think all three teams are going to be in the playoffs? And do you think who do you think is going to take the division overall?
I mean, it's so hard to call right now. Obviously, first and fourth place, there's four games between them, which is, you know, a good week and a bad week. If the Yankees continue to rake and Boston has a little slide, then the division changes so rapidly. So it's so hard to call right now. I mean, I have to think Boston, the way they're hitting and the way some of their pitchers are pitching right now, Rick Porcello obviously in particular, I find it hard to see them slipping out of the playoffs entirely. Whether they hold on to the division is another question. I think the Orioles might struggle. I think they will probably be a team to miss out in the AL just because their starting pitching is really struggling at the moment. And as good as some of their hitters have been, I don't think the home run parade can take them all the way into the postseason. And you'd hate to rule out the Blue Jays, of course. Those guys went to the postseason last year and went pretty deep, and that lineup is terrifying. And the Yankees, I mean, they were dead and buried, what, 3-4 weeks ago, but these young guys keep bombing, these baby bombers keep hitting well, so who am I to rule them out? What about you? How do you see the division shaking up?
I've been on record, and I think the guys asked me a while ago that I think the Red Sox have got the most talent there, and I think they will take the division, and I think the Jays will be second. The Orioles do have a lot of power, but I don't have much faith outside of their bullpen in the rest of the roster, and they've got some pretty horrible options in the rotation. So I think they're going to fall a little bit short. And I think I'm gonna stick with my Astros pick to get in as the second wild card that I made about a month or so ago. Even though they sort of every time they surge back against the Rangers, it seems like they then go on a 5-6 game losing streak. But I think they've got some really great talent there as well, and I think ultimately that's going to come through, and they'll be able to pick the Orioles for that second spot.
Yeah, no, I think that's a good point.
Over in the NL, the Cubs have obviously had everything wrapped up for a really long time, and the Nationals and the Dodgers are looking pretty secure as well now. So it's really all about the wild card races in the field. Do you think that the Giants will do it, or is it going to be the Mets and the Cardinals? How do you see that one playing out in the next few weeks?
Yeah, that one's going to be interesting. I mean, there's only three teams in it, but the three teams are all, what, half a game apart. So that's going to be a fascinating one to watch. The Mets, I feel like they just don't have the same team they had last year. I mean, that's mostly because for Fist, their starting rotation is currently injured or on an extended break. But their young guys keep coming in and performing. I don't know how long that will last for. But guys like Gesellman, if that's how you pronounce it, Lugo, these guys are coming in and throwing quality starts. I do have a bit of a soft spot for the Mets just because they're the lovable losers. So I would like to see them get in. And they're currently on a 6-game winning streak, so who am I to say they're not a good team? But ultimately, when it comes down to it, I think the Cardinals get in because the Cardinals always seem to get in. They just have that ability to win. Lord knows how they do it. But yeah, they've got good starting pitching. They've got good hitting. So I see the Cardinals getting in. And then, I mean, the Giants have such a good team on paper, and they were so good in the first half, but it's all just fallen apart. I think in the end, they will scrape through. I mean, all it takes, I suppose, is one bad week for the Dodgers, and they're back on top of the division. But yeah, I think the Giants will just scrape in ahead of the Mets. But that'll be an interesting one to watch. I hope it stays close right down to the final week, because we could have some real fireworks going off in that wildcard race.
Yeah, there's definitely the potential, I think, in the NL for it to not be very interesting. You know, if one of these three wildcard teams does have a really bad week, then we could be looking at three obvious division winners and two obvious wildcard teams as well. So that would be a little bit disappointing. And obviously, I think the Cubs are probably maybe only a week or so from actually being confirmed as division winners and having the best record already. So that kind of takes some of the fun out of that. Do you think that they'll go the way this year? Do you think they'll finally break the curse, or is it still to come in a future year for this? They've obviously got a very young team still.
I mean, it's so hard to bet against them right now, isn't it? They've just been irresistible this season. Then again, it's so hard to rely on the Cubs after, what is it now, 112 years of pain. So I'm a bit conflicted there. But the great thing and the bad thing about the postseason is that in a 5-game series, anyone can win. You know, all it takes is a couple of great starting performances and the Cubs are dumped out by someone. So that's why it's so hard to call. But the way Arrieta, Hendricks, Lester, Lackey are all performing, well, maybe not Lackey, but the rest of them are all performing at the moment. The rotation is so strong, and then they have, what, 2, 3, 4, I mean, it seems MVP candidates up and down the lineup, so it's so hard to get to bet against them, especially if they do get home field advantage, which looks almost inevitable at this point. So I'd say they have to be the favourites, whether they make it or not. I could see the Nationals upsetting them. I could see any team, really, once they get in, upsetting them. But yeah, it's hard to look beyond them as the NL favourites and as the World Series favourites, really.
Yeah, I have to agree. I know there is certainly some Cubs fans who are probably telling us not to curse them now, but they've been so much better than every other team. And while I do think that the Nationals have still got a really good team, then they're not even comparable to the Cubs. They're probably going to see 104, 105 wins out of them before the season's out. So I think you've got to bet on them. It's the sensible choice. But I know it must be very nail-biting for those Cubs fans. I think it's 108 years, I think. So yeah, if the Giants don't get in, then I'll be rooting for them. But we'll wait and see what happens on that front. On the topic of the playoffs, I actually wanted to ask you about sort of how you watch the game, whether you get to watch an awful lot live, or do you go back on MLB TV or something and watch games back when you get the chance? Because it's obviously a lot harder for us UK fans at times to see live games. So how often do you get to watch baseball, and sort of what are your favourite methods of consuming it?
Yeah, I'm sure like a lot of British-based baseball fans, my ability to watch the games is based pretty much entirely on what time the games run in the US, because anything after, well, any of the late games about 7 o'clock Eastern US, obviously it's midnight here, which makes it a bit tough to watch and also be a human being during the daytime. So I'll try and watch whatever games run in the daytime here. So the games will start at 6 o'clock, usually at Perfect. In terms of which games I watch, I usually pick whatever the pitching matchup is best. For the guy I particularly want to watch, if Jose Fernandez is pitching, if Clayton Kershaw is pitching, I'm probably going to turn that game on. But other than that, I'll just look at which matchups are good, which teams I want to watch. I try and mix up watching as many teams as I can, just because I want to watch guys play. If I hear about some player, I want to see him play live. So I kind of try and mix up what I'm doing. But yeah, the great thing about baseball is you can see something different every day. I have spent painful hours sat watching an 8-1 blowout and things like that. But then again, when you do, you know, get to watch a no-hitter go into the 6th or 7th or 8th, that's when you find yourself clinging to your sofa at 11 o'clock wondering what's happened to your life.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you have a lot of other baseball fans that you know sort of in person that you talk to about, or is it all kind of online that you've met people to talk about the game?
I have one friend who I lived with last year, who I introduced to baseball, basically. And the most annoying thing is, a couple of years ago, he wanted to get into baseball, and he asked me for a team to follow that wasn't very good then, but would be good in the future. And I said, well, you have to take the Cubs. I mean, they're going to suck for a few years, but they've got a decent young core. They might be good eventually. And of course, his team has turned out to be incredible in the 2 years since I told him that, and my team has just got worse. So that's painful for me. But he's got really into it because the Cubs have been good, so that's the one silver lining. I actually play baseball in the UK. I played for my university and I played for a team in Richmond near me. So I have guys who play baseball who I know are a big fan, so I'll talk to them when I play and discuss it with them, which is nice to have someone I can at least vent about Rocky's woes with, or talk about that crazy no-hitter from last week. So that's nice, yeah. Although obviously the online scene now is great. Thanks to Twitter, I can talk to baseball fans across the country, which is really cool.
Yeah, it certainly helps a lot to have it so accessible on the internet. The other guys that you play baseball with, do they sort of find themselves, do they pick up a lot of tips from watching on TV, or do you not find the game so different here that it's not really comparable, even watching like maybe the college game or something like that?
I mean, to an extent, I think what you watch on TV, you want to do. If I see a guy make an unbelievable play, I want to go out and try and replicate it. And we'll always practice doing our most ludicrous bat flips, because that's the most important part of baseball, in my opinion.
Yeah, definitely.
but I think generally, yeah, it's quite hard. Obviously, at the level that I play at, a level across most of British baseball is nowhere really close to MLB standard, which makes it hard to learn a lot. It more just gives me a grudging admiration for those guys who go out 162 games a year and play that well. But no, it's nice. When I do play, I tend to learn just how hard the game of baseball is, and how hard it is to do all the stuff that looks so easy on TV. So in that respect, I think it's given me like an increased understanding of baseball and increased respect for the guys who play it. But I'm not sure if I'll find myself on doing anything that's been seen on TV anytime soon.
No, it does remind me, I did play briefly where I used to be over in Norwich. So I played with the UEA team a bit. This American guy came over from a college sort of on a transfer year, and he sort of, you know, he seemed amazing. He was like crushing the ball, and he could pitch, and he sort of seemed like he could do everything. And I finally, when I looked up his stats, and you know, he had about 650 ERA in college ball or something.
Yeah,
it was just his stats in America were pretty terrible, but he was, you know, the best player on the pitch by miles. So that kind of really brought it home for me how much more experience they have and how different the level of the game is, because a lot of people here are just starting from you know, maybe when they go to university, and some of these guys when they get to university have already been playing for 10 or 11 or 12 years. So it's kind of crazy how much more experience and knowledge of the game they have just even when they get to that stage.
Yeah, no, it is. I mean, the guys in America, yeah, a lot of them playing for the moment they can walk. Similar to you, I had a guy I played with this year who was a catcher in college in the United States, and he was pretty good. I mean, he had good stats from college. He was never quite MLB quality. But when he came over here, I mean, he played with us for fun. He wasn't playing to win. But you could just tell from the way that he hit and the way that he played the game that he was just a different level, which gave me, yeah, again, it's the kind of thing where maybe if I'd been playing since I was 4 years old, I'd be good too. But at this point, I'm never going to get close to even your average, you know, high school or college player in the US, which is amazing, really. But yeah, like you said, for players new to the game, it is a chance to just, you know, get out, play baseball, have a bit of exercise, have some fun, which I think ultimately is what grassroots baseball comes down to. So it is nice just to get a chance to play, really.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's a lot going on. And obviously, if you listened to the podcast last week, you would have heard John talking to Liam Carroll, which is a great listen if you haven't already done it, about the game. So it is growing in the UK, and hopefully we'll get more people interested in it, and maybe we won't be quite so far behind the Americans when they come over anymore.
Yeah, exactly. So, I know. Sorry, carry on.
Just finally, wanted to ask you if you had anything else in the works in terms of writing or things you're doing for your site, anything you've been thinking about doing?
Yeah, I mentioned to John, I might write up an article on MVP candidates in one or both leagues. I just got a couple of interesting races going on right now in both leagues, really, in terms of MVP. Obviously, in the AL, you've got Mike Trout doing Mike Trout things. Should he win the MVP when the Angels are so bad? Should we hold that against him? And then in the National League, both the MVP and Cy Young races are pretty interesting. Can Kershaw win it when he's been injured for a few months now? Is Chris Bryant going to sweep the MVP award? So yeah, I might get a piece up hopefully in the next week or so, looking at some of the awards winners. And yeah, it'd be interesting to, I'm sure we'll chat about that closer to the time. But yeah, I think that'll be interesting as the season draws to a close, which guys really stand out and pull ahead in those races.
Yeah, definitely. Not to spoil the article, but just on the Mike Trout topic, where do you stand on the player on a bad team? Do you think Trout should just be getting it every year? I'm kind of on that side of the fence myself. But what's your opinion of that?
I think it's really unfair to hold the fact that his team is so bad. I mean, he's been a stand-up player since he joined the league. And I think we've kind of grown used to him being so good, which is a bit unfair on him probably, because this year we haven't heard a lot about him, and he's just been out there crushing the ball, doing Mike Trout things, stealing more bases again. But then again, it is hard. I mean, you get these narratives of guys who, you know, are dragging their teams into the postseason. It is easy to go along with the argument that, you know, if Toronto do finish strong, can you, you know, Josh Donaldson's going to be one of the key reasons why they do get into the postseason, which makes it a lot easier to make that argument. So whilst I personally agree with you that it'd be unfair to hold him accountable for how bad his team is, I think it's going to be tough for him if a guy like Donaldson has a big final month to make the argument that he's been just as valuable on a team that probably will struggle to win 75 games.
Yeah, it's unfortunate you do feel for Mike Trout, but then again, I suppose he's doing all right for himself, so I shouldn't worry too much about him. Okay, I think we'll go ahead and wrap it up there. If you'd just like to remind everybody where they can find you on the internet, on Twitter and your website, and let them know all those kind of details.
Yeah, sure thing. So, I'm Ben. My Twitter handle for all baseball-related things is at UK Baseball Blog, all one word, UK Baseball Blog. And there's a link to my blog from there, which I try to update, but I'm really bad at updating. And then, yeah, the Batflips and Nerds WordPress page has my latest article on pitch framing on, if that interests you. And hopefully I'll be producing new stuff in the coming weeks. So, yeah, that's where you can find me.
Okay, great. And you can find me on Twitter at DariusA64, and obviously the main Batflips and Nerds account, Batflips_Nerds, and the website batflipsandnerds.wordpress.com, where you can obviously go and find Ben's excellent framing article. So I'd encourage everybody to go and check that out. We'll be back next week. We've got another very exciting interview lined up, so stay tuned for that one. It's going to be a good one. And until then, keep watching baseball.
Thanks, Darius.